Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back into the Card Chronicle podcast. It is Thursday, December 30th, last episode of 2021. It's actually been a while since we've done this. The holidays affected both myself and Dan to the point where we couldn't get together for a pod, but we're back now, even though Dan is kind of toughing it out today, a little bit under the weather. Dan, how you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about before we got on here, but it seems like the whole world is a little under the weather at this point. Nothing earth-shattering, but we'll play through it. Nothing that's going to get in the way of this wonderful pod.
You're sounding better now. A second ago when we were talking, you sounded like when they're trying to protect somebody's identity in an interview and they modulate their voice. That's what you sounded like when I first came on. I was like, should be a great fucking pod. This is going to be awesome. Now, I was going to ask how your Christmas went, even though, you know, I know we've talked about it, but I've got to bring up the fact, and maybe this is playing a part in your illness. You do this thing around this time of the year every year where you go on like a 2-week holiday bender pretty much.
This is very true. And I mean, to be honest, like, this is the first year I feel really taxed afterwards, but like, I don't even know if the bender's truly over because we have, well, like tonight I'm going to the Blue Jackets game. And then obviously like, New Year's Eve's coming up, and my wife is a huge Michigan fan, so they got that game, and I'm sure that'll be part of the festivities. So, yeah, really, I took like a kind of a 2-day hiatus here to recover, but we're just going to pick up right back where we left off.
All right, every day for the last couple, like, I'll be getting ready to go to radio at like 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, and you're texting our text group, you're like, switching from bloodies to bourbon, here we go. I'm like, it's 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have an excuse for my behavior. I really look forward to this time of year. Like, I build it up so much, like, before it takes place. And, like, now's about the time where I'm contemplating all my decisions I've been making. But, I have to get back on the horse by tonight. There's no other option. First Jackets game of the year. They've been off for a while, so pretty excited.
Is anybody selling pipe now that you've been drinking for two pipe sales? Just plummeting.
Pipe is still moving, believe it or not. I don't know how much I have to do with it, but pipe is still moving.
Well, there's no way to accurately sum up all the things that have taken place since the last time we did a pod, because I believe the last time we did a pod was the what the fuck is happening day when we couldn't figure out if Vince Tyree was leaving or what was going on with Neely Bendapudi. We had no idea that Neely Bendapudi was about to bounce for Penn State in the middle of the night. So safe to say some stuff has happened since the last time we talked. There's no way to summarize it all, but we will talk football. We will talk men's basketball. We will talk a little bit about our holiday experiences overall. I guess let's start with football since the season is now officially over, and that's the good news. We don't have to watch U of L lose another game in 2021, so there's that. We don't need to talk, I guess, specifically about the bowl game at length, because I think by now people are kind of tired of hearing about it. So let's start with this. Louisville, the big talk going into the season was, you know, the fan base is not really having an extreme opinion on Scott Satterfield. There aren't many of the, you know, Satterfield's the greatest coach ever. Satterfield deserves to be fired right now. It was more like, I'm kind of okay with him, or more, I'm kind of not okay with him. Let's see how this season goes. Now, 6-7, the first back-to-back losing seasons for Louisville football since Steve Kragthorpe's last years of 08-09. And I feel like, and I'm sure this will temper off a little bit in the months ahead, but as of right now, like Scott Satterfield kind of feels like one of the least popular people in Louisville. I think the fan base is just kind of fed up with not having good things happen. And the 8 months ahead, we talked about it this whole season. If you don't win big, if you don't finish strong with a you know, win over Kentucky, or at least a good performance against Kentucky, and then a solid performance in the bowl game, those 8 months leading into the 2022 season are kind of unsellable for U of L. And I think that's where we are now. I think we have an 8 months ahead where it's almost impossible to sell this fan base on Louisville football being a good product in 2022, or at least a product that's at the level that the fan base wants it to be. This is a weird time to be a U of L football fan right now.
Yeah, if anything, the loss to Kentucky and then the loss to Air Force, and yes, are there excuses built in there? Yeah, but every team is going through adversity this time of year right now. But if anything, those two losses, as a fan base, we've kind of reached a boiling point together. Is all right. Well, this next year is it. You know, if next year doesn't pan out. Sorry, somebody just rang my doorbell. I don't know doorbells. But if next year does not pan out, there's just absolutely no way. You know, I can see it going beyond next year. And to be honest, he's probably going to have to get off to a hot start. You know, just to win some of these fans back. Cause right now, you know, like you said, it feels like we're losing a big portion of the fan base. There's really nothing at this point to get excited about. I don't think even staff changes. There's no way we're going to make a big earth-shattering staff change that's going to change the perception in my mind. You know, the recruiting is what it is. Yes, we've picked up some nice transfers, but we've also had some key guys transfer out. So I don't know. It's really not a great time right now. You know, it's kind of one of those things, you know, if the athletic department doesn't want to go all in and, you know, have a mediocre product or something different than the mediocre product on the field, then I don't think the fan base is going to go all in either. And that's kind of the point we're at right now. So until something is done, it's going to be hard to get fans back on the bandwagon.
And I don't think you're going to see, I know there was a quote that Eric Crawford put out there after the game on Tuesday that apparently was a little bit misleading, saying you know, there's going to be a lot of staff changes and all this stuff. And then I guess U of L reached out to Crawford and clarified, like, no, there's not. We may hire some new guys, but it sounds like everybody who was coaching in that bowl game is going to remain in place for 2022. So, yay.
And I'm not here to call anybody out, but
I am.
I mean, the defense, did the offense stall in the red zone? Yes. You know, should we have thrown the ball better against Air Force? Yes. We started to click there at the end of the game, got going a little late, but, and I know we had some guys out on the back end, but my God, I mean, this isn't Justin Herbert we're facing back here. I mean, that kid looked like he, you know, like the throwing motion of a JV high school quarterback.
He looked like an actor playing an athlete in a bad movie. Like that's what it looked like. Like the Kurt Warner movie. I'm like, this guy, can he really throw?
It was, it's just unbelievable. It seems like every time we need to bring pressure, we don't. You know, every time we bring pressure, we get burned. I don't know. I don't really know. And this is, you know, Brian Brown's, you know, coming up in his fourth year. We really have not seen an improvement on that side of the ball. You know, yes, have our numbers gone up? Of course they have. But it always seems like we make just enough plays to lose the game. You know, there's not a winning mentality on that side of the ball, especially. So I don't know what gets that fixed, but I know I'm sick of seeing it, and I'm pretty sure most of the fan base is as well.
I mean, we've got guys who look like the second string wide receivers for St. X's JV team streaking down the middle of the field just wide open and then making us fall down like they're fucking Lamar Jackson in the middle of the field. It was that game overall, and I know I said we weren't going to talk about the game specifically, but we can talk about it briefly. That game was so symptomatic of this entire season, and really the last 2 years, where it's not like they were flat out terrible. It's not like they went out there and just got blown out. They did some things well. They held the number one rushing offense in the country to half of their per game total on the ground, and their lowest yards per carry average of the season at 3.1. That's incredible. That's fantastic. Great job, Brian Brown. Of course, they also let a team that had not attempted a pass in six quarters of football throw for 252 yards and two touchdowns. It's just, they cannot get out of their own way. Like nothing is ever, there's never a time, at least not when we're playing Duke, where everything's clicking at the same time. If they're doing one thing right, they're doing two things wrong. If they're doing two things right, they're doing three things wrong. The offense, like you said, they were moving the ball effectively, especially in the second half, and then you get like a questionable Adonis Boone holding penalty or a face mask call after a play has already stopped or unnecessarily rushing to the line to run the same play on fourth and one, which, by the way, Air Force, smart kids over there.
Yeah.
They know that when you rush right to the line immediately after running a play, you're always running the exact same play that you just ran. Every team in America does that. They knew what was coming. They were ready for it. They stuffed it out. And that pretty much ended up deciding the game. Also, we went from having the most accurate kicker in America inside of 50 yards to a guy who can't come within 40 yards of the uprights for some reason. Like, I just don't understand what's happened with this team. And I know that I understand where Scott Satterfield's coming from, where after every goddamn game he's saying the same thing about us being close and just being one or two plays away, because he's not wrong.
Yeah.
But at some point, that becomes who you are. At some point, the team that can't put away a 17-point lead in a fourth quarter, the team that can't, you know, put its foot on the neck of an opponent when they get them down by 10 points late in the third quarter, you're going to keep finding yourself in that situation. And if you don't have the culture or the whatever intangible to make the plays necessary to win games, that's who you are. You're a team that can't put games away and then can't win when it gets close. And we've been that way for two seasons now. And at some point, like, It no longer becomes a viable excuse. It's just you've lost four more games than you've won over the last two seasons. That's all that matters. Close is not good enough. Win some fucking games. And that's where we are going into 2022. Like, it doesn't feel like the Steve Kragthorpe era, where going into his last season, everybody knew what was going to happen. There was no hope that team was going to overachieve, and everybody knew it was going to be Steve Kragthorpe's swan song. I think a lot of people believe that year four will be the last year for Scott Satterfield, but would I be shocked if that team went like 8-4 and surprised people?
Satterfield he's hands down a better coach than Steve Kragthorpe. Like, I could see Satterfield, if things don't work out next year, go to another program and do actually really good. Like, I think he's a good football coach, but for whatever reason, I mean, our program right now, I mean, like you said, whether it's a culture thing, whether it's a mentality thing, they just seem to always have in the back of their mind, something bad is going to happen, or they're one play away from losing the game. And at some point, like, when that happens, and I know most of these games, I mean, the games are on the players, I get that. But, like, a coach has to win you, like, one or two of these. He has to do something, you know, to make something happen. But just right now, I don't know. It's just like the players know that the other shoe's about to drop, it feels like.
And yeah.
I don't know how you get that turned around. I don't know, you know, especially in one season, because, I mean, we're not really going to have much turnover as far as, you know, I guess we are going to have a little bit of turnover with, like, transfers and stuff, but it's going to be mostly the same guys in those buildings, you know, like you said, with the coaches sound like they're coming back. So, I mean, are we going to support the program? Of course we are. But do we have, like, you know, good thoughts and good feelings going into next year? It's, if I said yes, I'd be lying to myself.
And it's not, like, over-the-top angry feelings. I think it's just apathetic. It's people just being like, well, I'm sure we'll be 6-6 again or something like that. And it's just – it's like we settled into this comfort zone of mediocrity, and it's not where anybody wants to be. And I mean, you're right. Like, I don't go into Saturdays like I did with when Ron Cooper was here or Steve Kragthorpe was here, thinking, like, we're not going to play hard. We're going to get blown out. When we fall behind by two touchdowns like we did against Air Force, I expect us to come back and make it a close game. When we get ahead by two touchdowns, I expect us to shit the bed and let it become a close game again. It's not like every Louisville fan is going into every game thinking, you know, is it going to be a 20-point loss or a 30-point loss? We're just waiting to see how this team finds a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory this week. Like, that's what it's become. And I agree with you about Scott Satterfield, although he has done some head-scratching things. I'll never understand the clock management at the end of the first half, which
was not
just a first responder bowl thing. It's been a problem for 3 years now. I don't know if the staff understands the rules of football, that, like, you don't get to keep the ball on the field where it was when you start the second half. It changes possession. We don't act like we know that that's what takes place, and that's frustrating. But I still think that Satterfield, like, you don't have the level of success that he had at App State without knowing what you're doing. I think he knows what he's doing. My biggest question, and I know he's said otherwise and he's trying to show us otherwise, but it's hard not to speculate and it's hard not to feel this way. I don't know if he wants to be here. Like, I don't know if he likes being Louisville's head football coach. And I don't know if the culture fit is right. I think that that's the big takeaway because, look, Louisville is a program where the right coach has had almost the highest level of success here multiple times. We know it can be done here. We know Satterfield can have success. We know he can get the job done on the field. And for whatever reason, it's just not clicking here. And I don't know who to blame for that. I think, and if Satterfield's saying, look, of course I want to be here. This is a great job. I'd love to be here. You're going to have to start showing us, man, because the South Carolina thing spoke volumes. The fact that you don't seem to have a whole lot of energy either on the sidelines or after games, that kind of speaks volumes too. We need you to show us a little bit in these 8 months ahead that you kind of want to be the head coach here, that you're enthusiastic and you believe you can get the job done and you believe you can be the guy here for a long time. Because as of right now, it's hard for me not to doubt that. And you're right. We're bringing back a lot of guys next year, most notably Malik Cunningham at quarterback. There should be at least a little bit of hope going into the summer that this is a team that can be better than it's been the last 2 years. And they also opened the season with a pretty manageable stretch. Like, I don't think it's been announced yet, but they're going to play Syracuse in their season opener, which is a team that we have repeatedly kicked the absolute shit out of since we joined the ACC.
Is it at Syracuse?
It'll be at Syracuse because we played them here 3 years in a row because of COVID, which is weird. It'll be at the Carrier Dome. And who boy, if you somehow don't win that game, you want to talk about apathy turning to anger very quickly. That's exactly what's going to happen. He's going to have to get off to a hot start next year to have any hope of reeling this fan base back in.
Yeah, and I don't know what the right coach is for us because, like, I'm looking at, like, the coaches that have had success. Like, Charlie Strong and Bobby Petrino are, like, two complete opposite people.
Not exactly sat guys.
Yeah, not exactly sat guys, but – like, I feel like Kragthorpe and Sat, they do kind of have maybe the same sideline demeanor. So I don't think it's, like, one specific thing, like, our fan base is looking for in a coach. But you're right. It just doesn't seem like the passion is there. And, again, we're not at practice. We're not in the weight room. I'm sure, you know, stuff behind closed doors. I mean, the players really do seem to care about the guy. So I have no doubt that he connects with the players, connects with the coaches. But – you know, the results aren't happening. And that's basically what it comes down to. It's a results-driven program. The fan base expects more. And like you said, you know, these next 8 months are going to be key to getting ready just for game one. Because, I mean, you lose that, wow. Talk about the fan base turning their backs for the rest of the season. That would be tough.
I'm going to tell you, and this is a personal thing. So maybe people listening don't feel the same way. Maybe you don't feel the same way. But one thing that absolutely has to change in my mind moving forward is this passive voice that Satterfield does after losses where he acts like it's just something like he just lost a lottery drawing. Like, this happened to us. Like, eventually, you know, those plays are going to go our way. Or, you know, we have a bad break here, a bad break there. You're in control of these things, dude. Like, yeah. I'm sick of hearing the, like, well, it just – he talks about – football games as if it's the weather. Like one of these days it's not going to rain when we're trying to play. One of these days we're going to get a good – like, take control. The bad plays didn't happen to you. Your guys made them happen. Your guys didn't make the plays necessary. Like, start acting like you're an active participant in these losses and that you have some control over this. Like, you're not just going out there and letting the chips fall where they may. You're the fucking head coach. Like, you're going to have to – you're going to have to do better than that. And that,
let me ask you, Brian Brown, I mean, he's one of Sat's guys, right?
Yes.
So obviously for that reason, it seems like he does not want to part with them. But I don't understand it. Do you think he's scared that they'd almost be starting from scratch by bringing a new defensive coordinator in? Is it a scheme thing? I have a hard time, riding out someone who's been this unsuccessful in 4 years. And yes, I know what he had to work with when he came here. But like, if I'm on my last year and I know like it's make or break and like this is what I've seen the past 4 years, I'm probably going to bring somebody else in, whether I'm close to that person or not. I mean, this is my job on the line. So I just don't understand from that standpoint if he were to bring him back, but that's just me.
I mean, starting from scratch is like a dream right now. Like,
yeah.
You talk about not wanting to go back and starting from scratch if you've seen signs of progress. We're not seeing progress. Like, I get that he inherited one of the worst defenses in Power 5 conference history after 2018. But we finished 82nd, or at least as of right now, I know there's still more bowl games to be played. We're 82nd in total defense right now in the country. There are only 130 FBS teams. 82nd is not good. And I think we were 88th in his first year and something like 56th last year because the COVID year was weird and so many teams didn't play. Like, we're not seeing the level of progress, if there even is any progress, that you need to be seeing from a defensive coordinator going into year four. I think that, because my understanding is Brown's not going anywhere, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. If I sucked that badly at my job for 3 years, I would expect to be fired. But like you said, Satterfield and Brown have a close relationship. Satterfield clearly believes in him. I do think that you're going to see Louisville go out and hire another co-defensive coordinator to replace Court Dennison, which... I mean, Court was co-defensive coordinator in name only, really. Do we ever talk about the Court Dennison defense? No, it's always been the Brian Brown defense. I think everybody knows who exactly is calling the shots there. So I think you'll see a new defensive coach hired. I think you'll see somebody hired to replace Stu Holt to coach the tight end, Stu Holt, who left for Virginia Tech. And then I think there's at least a possibility that Satterfield goes out there and hires an official offensive coordinator and doesn't just make himself one. And that could just be one of those trying to take some of the pressure off of me or alleviate some of the duties that have been weighing me down type deal. But I don't think that's a guarantee. But I think all the guys that we saw coach their positions on Tuesday night or Tuesday afternoon, they're going to be here again next year. And that's not exactly, I think, what anybody wants to hear. But man, yeah, the defense has been bad. There's no way around it, and it hasn't gotten a whole lot better. They've had flashes against bad teams, but against the best teams they've played, they have shown no signs of being able to slow down anybody. And that's on Brown.
It's troubling that UK, you get absolutely pulverized by the run, and then Air Force, you get torched through the air. I mean, so it's not like we're, we got one thing to work on. I mean, it's just an overall thing, but I don't know. I mean, it's been negative long enough. I do want to give a shout out to Jawar Jordan. I mean, what the hell?
Yes.
Dude, he was unbelievable. It was almost like this is my favorite thing Petrino used to do back in the day when he would like basically hide a guy all year. And then here comes like this kick return. I'm like, who the hell is Harry Douglas?
Do you remember that? So in 04, the Liberty Bowl, you and I and all of our friends, we went to Royal Lex in Lexington,
Lexington
for New Year's Eve to watch that game. And I remember like all of us, like, we're like, let's fucking go Zeke Parker, baby. Here we go. Yeah. And they're like, deep to return for Louisville is Harry Douglas. And all of us were like, who the fuck is Harry Douglas? And he ended up being pretty damn good.
Yeah, no, 100%. But, yeah, I mean, Jawar Jesus, he ran the ball so hard. I was like, give this kid the rock more. I mean, and Travion had a good game as well. I think running back is like the one thing where we're not worried that, and I guess quarterback for the most part, but he looked really good. I just wanted to give him a shout out.
He was incredible. I mean, and he almost changed the whole tide of the game with that kick return. I'm curious to see where his place is on this team next year, because like you said, you got Jalen Mitchell presumably coming back. Travion Cooley has sent out some pretty vague tweets. He's doing the thing, and I've talked about this on the radio show, but he's doing like the 2009 Facebook thing where you would post a very vague passive aggressive status to try to get attention. And you'd be like, you know, Danny Sennard is just tired of this. Like, you know, just.
Oh, man. Danny Sennard is. This sounds like every girlfriend I ever had from like.
Oh, I know.
Through like 2012. I'm like, was that directed at me?
Yeah, so sick of this. When's it going to change? And then like every comment is like, you okay? It's like, yeah. And it's like giving no details whatsoever. That's kind of been like Cooley's been posting a bunch of statuses where it's like, if you don't use me now, you're going to regret it later or something like that. And I mean, he could be talking about a girl. He could be talking about a class. Like you just
he's like, Chick-fil-A's been closed on campus lately. I'm just as yeah. Pumped.
It could be that, but I think at this point, because he played in the bowl game and he was a part of a lot of the promotional stuff that they did, you assume he's going to be back. And then you bring in Tyon Smith from Tennessee, and like talking to my friends who are Tennessee fans, every single one of them, and it's like four of them, are like, that dude's unbelievable. Like he was our best running back last year before he got hurt. He may have had some issues going to class or whatever. That was the rumor, but he's absolutely a superstar. Like, and sorry to Keith Wynn. Keith Wynn's like, he'll probably be our most talented offensive player next year. So you've got him in the fold. You've got your returning starter. You've got your returning primary backup. And then now Jawar Jordan, who, like you said, he looked like our fastest back on Tuesday, and he ran so damn hard too. He was delivering some blows. I wonder if it would be able, if it would be possible to like convert him into kind of a slot guy, maybe use him as like the way we use Tutu Atwell, because we were missing that a lot this year. And now you've lost Jordan Watkins already. I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here, but it feels like we're pretty set at running back. Where we're not set, Dan, is in the secondary where we, you know, Trey Clark will be back, you assume, after missing a lot of the year because he was hurt. You now lose unexpectedly Greedy Vance, who that says he's going to transfer. No doubt. And then Brian Brown, who I guess is just wrong about everything, is at his press conference is like, well, he's got some family stuff going on. He wants to be closer to home in New Orleans, so that's where he's going to transfer. And then Greedy Vance goes to Florida State a day later. And is like, we looked it up. Tallahassee is 7 hours away from New Orleans. I don't think that that's the reason why he's making that move. But he probably would have been your starting corner opposite Clark next year. Now he's gone. You're losing Quinterio Cole to the next level, but you're bringing in the kid from Temple who probably should start right away at safety. We got to get a couple more defensive backs because – I don't know if it was apparent enough on Tuesday, but the guys that we had who hadn't played a whole lot this year, I don't think are good enough to step in right away and play next year. So we're going to have to get better there. Not a whole lot of depth at that position. And then wide receiver, we're trying to bring in some guys and bringing in the transfer from Miami, D. Higgins, and then getting the flip from Florida State on signing day, I'm sure helps there, but still got to develop some guys at that position as well. But everywhere else, you're bringing a whole lot back. So it's one of those, I guess, good and bad news type deals.
Yeah. I mean, I'm confident in Everett in the offensive line, quarterback, running back, D-line. I know we're trying to build depth. I hate that we're losing C.J. Avery. That guy was an absolute boss. But, yeah, I mean, really my eyes are just on the defensive side of the ball for the most part. Are there things we can improve on the offense? Of course, but we're not going to go anywhere if the defense doesn't improve.
We're going to switch the conversation to hoops here. Before we do, I want to remind you guys, this podcast brought to you by our friends over at Home Field Apparel. If you missed their big sales for Christmas, for Black Friday, no shame in that. You can still save money with your purchase at Home Field Apparel by using the promo code CHRONICLE15, all one word at checkout. It's going to save you 15% off your first order on any Home Field Apparel order, whether it's Louisville or one of the other 375 schools that they've got. They're adding new schools every week. Follow them on social media. at Home Field Apparel without AE on Twitter. It's at Home Field Apparel on Instagram. They're updating you on which new schools they're unveiling. And if you just want Louisville gear, it's the best place to go. I'm wearing my Louisville Hoops sweatshirt right now. They've got all sorts of cool retro designs. They have the most comfortable sports clothing you're ever going to find. And again, you can save 15% by using the promo code Chronicle15 at checkout. Check them out, homefieldapparel.com. All right, Dan, let's talk a little bit basketball. And if we had been recording this pod pretty much at any other point in the last 3 weeks, I think the tone would be vastly different than it's going to be right now. But we're coming off the heels of a Louisville victory over Wake Forest on Wednesday night that put the Cards at 2-0 in the ACC despite a lengthy COVID pause. We didn't get the UK game, obviously. I don't think it's going to be made up, which sucks. It feels wrong, even though it seemed like we were up against it. Well, let me ask you that, because I think there was a little bit of a fan base divide. I'm on the side of, even though it felt like we were going to lose that game and maybe lose that game handily, I wanted it to be played. I'm going to like making all the jokes of, you know, we haven't lost to UK in 789 days or whatever. Like, it'll be fun to do that. But still, this game has been played every single year of our lifetimes since 1983. It felt like we were missing out on a holiday when the game didn't take place. I'm upset. I wish it could be made up. I don't think it's going to be. But there's another side of the fan base that says, why would you want to play Kentucky if it looked like you were going to lose? I'm fine with not playing that game. Plus, it pisses them off, which is an added bonus. Which side do you fall on?
I'm more on your side. I mean, these last two college basketball seasons have been very choppy and just really no flow or continuity to it. Anything to kind of keep things on the norm, I'm all for. Would we have been up against it? Yes, probably. It seems like UK is really starting to hit their stride. And yes, we did beat Wake Forest last night, but I'm still pretty cautious about this team moving forward. But I'm in the same boat as you. It's a rivalry game. I want to play it. I like the banter. I like the feeling, the butterflies you get before the game. I really, what I want is just for the season to be as normal as possible. So hopefully at some point we can get there this season.
We're not there right now. There's no question. I mean, we've got 75 teams in COVID protocols.
Yeah.
With the CDC shortening the quarantine requirement for people who test positive from 10 days to 5 days, I feel like that will help not just college basketball, but all sports. So hopefully we've faced the last of it. I think it sounded like a lot of our guys got COVID this go round, which, you know, you hate to say is a good thing, but it means that if there is another outbreak somewhere, you're probably going to be safe. I mean, who the fuck knows? Like, I say these things and we've got no idea. Like everything that we end up saying winds up being wrong 2 weeks later. So there's no point in trying to project these types of things, but maybe we got it out of the way. Who knows? Regardless, Louisville took the court for the first time in almost 2 weeks last night to play Wake Forest, a Wake Forest team that was untested, but still 11-1. Had one of the better players in the conference in Alondis Williams. And although it was not a work of art, Dan, to put it mildly, exciting finish last night. The teams go six consecutive possessions where they hit three-pointers and the lead changes hands. Noah Locke finally steps up and makes some big-time shots late. Malik Williams was terrific. And at the end of the day, all that matters is Louisville gets the win. 2-0 in the ACC now. First place in the conference. Suck at Duke. And I'm like you, this game didn't change my overall outlook for the rest of the season dramatically. I still feel pretty pessimistic about our chances of making the NCAA tournament. But it's crazy how, like, even when I have this feeling, this sort of blah feeling about football and about men's basketball and about a lot of things going on with U of L athletics, just winning a game changes my mood so significantly. I've been so much happier for the last, 15 hours than I would have been if we'd lost that game. It feels good to have some hope. And if you beat Georgia Tech on Sunday, and then you should beat Pittsburgh on Wednesday, all of a sudden you've got a little bit of momentum. And maybe we can start talking about, can this team do some good things? Has this team figured some stuff out? But that's where we are right now. It's still kind of ugly for long stretches. There's no doubt about it. But it felt like we at least took a semi-step forward. The biggest thing that I liked seeing last night, and I'll let you talk after this, is just the emotion. Like it felt kind of like an old school, 5 years ago, feel inside of the Yum Center Wednesday night. The crowd going nuts, the players going nuts after every made shot. Mason Faulkner doing a gigantic dance, even though we're only ahead by two with like 19 seconds left. Like it at least felt good to see all of these guys seeming like this really, really mattered to them. That was nice.
I agree. And you never know. I mean, a win like that could just do wonders for the players' confidence. It has seemed like some of the guys have maybe been playing a little bit, you know, even though it seems like loose, I guess you could say, with the ball, but maybe they're playing a little bit tight or unsure, you know, of what they can and can't do. But that did feel, I don't want to say like old times, but maybe a glimmer of old times like last night. And it was nice to see some shots go down at the end, obviously. I mean, we know what happened in the Western game, which was hideous, but, yeah, I mean, Wake, they're a nice team. I know people are predicting them to, you know, maybe finish in the top three. I just think the cream of, you know, the Blue Bloods, maybe not Virginia, but I think the name brands might end up rising, you know, throughout the season.
I mean, can we just say real quick that Corey Alexander acted like that Wake Forest team was going to the goddamn Final Four last night? He's like, he's like, I think they're the second best team in the ACC. I was like, Corey, are you kidding? What are you doing, man? Like,
I mean, yeah, I was our man Corey says some questionable things, which I mean, like, I think he's like an actual nice person, but he does some questionable things.
The classic Dan nice person.
I don't want to rag on the guy. We got
Corey Alexander and Scott Satterfield, the same person in Dan's eyes. I'm going to say that you're nice right before I torture ass for being a moron.
I will say this. I like Forbes a lot. Like, I think he is dynamite, and I really do think like he'll get that program up into the upper echelon of the ACC for, you know, the next 5 to 7 years or however long that he's going to be there. And I love Alondis Williams. I would pay money to have that guy on my team. I think he's incredible. Shout out to Jared West, locking him up like the last, I don't know, whenever he came back in after the foul trouble. He did a wonderful job on him. They had that fluke kind of loose ball three that really was nobody's fault. We had just guys die for the loose ball. But, are there things that give me pause to just flat out, you know, pump my fist and celebrate? Yeah, 100%. But, you know, I'm never going to downplay a win that was big. We're 2-0 in the ACC, as down as it may be. You know, you throw up a good record in conference, and that's something that the committee has to take seriously, no matter how bad some of our out-of-conference losses are. So, happy with the win. There are some guys that we still need to get going. I was really happy with Sam last night on the offensive end. That's like – those plays were like the plays I envisioned him making when we recruited him. I was like, Jesus, like, where the hell has that been? But – you know, credit to him, Noah Locke, you know, I like Noah Locke. Like, I know it's one thing to say this when the ball is going in, saying like, I like that he like has like no memory when shooting. Cause it did help us last night. Like, you know, he missed a big shot in the next possession. He came back down and drained a three from almost the same place. Obviously he hit the big shot at the end. Malik, he's been great for us pretty much all year. You know, steady as can be. So let's just start kind of piecing it together here, and make a run. Like you said, these next two games are winnable, although I'm never going to count any game with this team as an absolute, like, chalk it up as a win, because we can lose to anybody. But nice to see the guys get a victory last night that they can enjoy.
It's funny you bring up that Noah Locke sequence, because I had the exact same thought, where he misses what looked like was a really, really good look that would have put us ahead by five. And then it's his man that hits a three from the corner wide open that puts them back ahead. And then he takes that three again. And when it goes in, I'm like, man, I love the shooter's mentality, right? Like, he's got the stones. He forgets about it right away. If he'd missed it, I would have been like, let's fire this guy to the fucking side. Like right away, I was just like, it's a great thing that you made that. I think it's time for the staff to have a difficult conversation with Noah Locke, because it's painfully apparent that we need Noah Locke catching and shooting from the perimeter. Like, that's his game. we don't need Noah Locke dribbling.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that when Chris Mack and company were trying to lure Noah Locke over here from Florida, I'm sure, you know, he has said he sees himself as a combo guard. He wanted to play on the ball more this year, wanted to handle it more, wanted to have the ball in his hands, show off his overall playmaking ability. And I'm sure Chris Mack and company said, you'll be able to do that here. It's a role that we're willing to let you play. It might be time to go back on that, because you can see why Mike White used him the way he did. He's a lethal catch and shoot guy. He is not a lethal off the bounce guy. And I know he had a little bit of success in the mid-range early on in the season. That success has completely disappeared now. And he hurts us when he's putting his head down and driving into three guys in the cluttered paint or trying to make plays on the fast break. Like, he needs to just kind of go back to that role where he's catch and shoot. Because he killed Wake Forest that way, but he also hurt us a lot of times when he was trying to do other things. I think it's time to probably have that talk. Also, Malik's been fantastic. Sam, I think I liked seeing him get the start last night. I know it was probably because Matt Cross was one of the players who was just coming out of quarantine, but he took full advantage. He looked kind of like the guy that we saw more times than not during the second half of last season. Got 12-8. That's what we need from Sam. He can help us out a lot immensely if he's able to do that on a consistent basis. Jalen Withers still, I think a mystery. He hit two big threes, and that was, you know, like he's been taking those shots a lot. He just hasn't made a whole lot of them. We need him to do other things. He tried to do some other stuff and wasn't really successful. Dre Davis also had a little rough game
with Jalen, by the way. Like, I think
he just doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, right now, like, even you can just tell, like, when he gets the rebound and brings the ball up the court, he has no idea whether to, like, take this to the rack, like, take his guy, or, like, you know, circle back and run the offense. Like, he's just very hesitant on his decision-making right now. You know, he'll have an open three, and he'll pass it up, or he'll make the wrong decision when driving. So, you know, he's just going through a funk. You know, I hope he can snap out of it, but it I don't think it's an effort thing with him, and I hope he's able to, you know, kind of get his mind right. But we're going to need him throughout the last half of the year, no doubt.
Can we give some props to our guy Sidney Curry last night?
Yeah.
At a time when Louisville really needed some sort of jolt, he comes in, gets a couple of putbacks, draws a couple of fouls. One of the fouls on a shot that he missed by about 5 feet. It was like a 5 foot shot that he missed 5 feet to the left. Not 100% sure that he got fouled, but we'll take it. Banked in a free throw. That was beautiful. He did, however, like, I think every Louisville fan in the world was doing the same thing. When he came down with that offensive rebound and he's got like three guys draped around him, everybody's like, kick it out, kick it out, kick it out, kick it out, kick it out. And then boom, airballed layup. Like, you knew it was coming. But it was hard to hate on my guy Sid. He gave us some big time minutes. It was nice to see him having some success down there. JJ Traynor still just not playing. It's hard to see him, I guess, being at Louisville next year as long as Chris Mack is, because it's a weird thing.
Yeah, I just did not see that coming before the year. You know, I don't know from a development standpoint in practice what's going on, but going back to Sidney Curry, that could be a potentially pretty big fine for us, because he is like a legit ACC D1 power forward body that we could really use if he's able to develop. Like, some of those rebounds he got, like, he just looked like an absolute man down there.
And it's huge.
I just think that's what this team is missing. We're not asking him to, you know, throw it into the post and make post moves. Like, get a couple offensive rebounds, get a putback. Like, that's just what this team needs 100%. And one thing I did notice yesterday, I know people are making a big deal about how poorly we shot from 2-point range, but I'm okay with it, because we got into the lane a lot more. We had a lot more close looks. Now, those close looks, a lot of them were, you know, Mason Faulkner, you know, going up, missing a couple layups, like Dre Davis fading away in the lane, you know, even though I know that's like his shot, like, if we could just turn those into like going strong to the basket, God, that would just make such a difference, because we got to the foul line. And ultimately I think that helped us win the game. Like,
for sure.
I know we fall in love with threes, and yes, we hit some big ones down the stretch last night that propelled us to a win. But I still think we got to get to the rim, get in the lane more. Are we going to finish every time? No, but I think it's a good sign that we at least got in there.
you have to keep going. The issue, though, is we're a terrible team finishing. We're awful around the rim. But I'm with you. I mean, we got to the free throw line 34 times, and I know some of those were late because Wake Forest was fouling. But getting to the free throw line, it's not just getting to the free throw line. It's, you know, getting Alonis Williams in foul trouble. Getting we had at one point with 12 minutes to go in the second half, we had three of their stars with three fouls. Like, that's a bigger deal than just getting points at the charity stripe, is making sure those guys have extended time on the bench. And we were really, really good at that yesterday. Now, did we get a little bit of a friendly whistle? I think probably so. And let's talk about the clock thing, because there is not even an inch of my being that feels sorry for Wake Forest about what happened with the clock last night. It is so perfect ACC that we go down there in football and get completely fucked by a clock operator, and then they come here in basketball. And if you missed it, you know, we missed a three with, 27 seconds to go. Matt Cross hustles down and gets the offensive rebound, kicks it back out. In that situation, the shot clock is supposed to reset to 20 seconds. It did not reset. So Wake stands around for, 9 seconds playing defense and then realizes, oh, shit, we have to foul. And that pretty much winds up being the game. And I get Steve Forbes being upset after the game. If I'm him, I'm doing the exact same thing. But it just felt so perfect to just – these smug, annoying Wake Forest fans that have been just so impossible to deal with, just so annoying. I can't stand them. I'm glad it happened this way. I would have rather had it happen this way than it just have happened without any sort of scrutiny or any sort of clock error. It was perfect. I loved it. I am smiling brighter this morning because it happened.
The thing is, as happy as I was, I really like Steve Forbes, so I felt, I guess, a little bad for him, but I fucking hope Dave Clawson was sitting in his comfortable hotel room getting ready to play Rutgers.
I hope they get destroyed by Rutgers.
What'd you say?
I hope they get destroyed by Rutgers. I know.
I love that their bowl kind of got ruined and they had to seven Rutgers team. I'm like, all right, now the shoe's turning a little bit.
I wanted them to play Duke. I wanted it to be the worst, most annoying, most terrible, blasé opponent possible. And Rutgers is pretty close.
Yeah, no, 100%. But, obviously, if we go on a little bit of a win streak here, say 6 or 7 games, needless to say, we need to find the shot clock operator and take him out for a couple drinks to celebrate, because that I'm not saying that one is the game, obviously. Credit to Sam for getting the rebound. But that was a pretty large sequence in the game. And, God, I mean, the last 2 years, nothing has gone our goddamn way. We deserve that, Dan.
I know.
So we'll take it. We took advantage of it. Credit to the guys. So we'll move on to the next one. But I'm the same way as you. I do not feel bad one bit.
Yeah, I said Matt Cross got the rebound. You're right. It was Sam. But I just picture Kenny Klein walking away with a limp that goes away like Kaiser Sose at the end, just being this was all Kenny somehow. He just sneakily walks out of the Yum Center with a shit-faced grin on his face, just staring back at the clock and being that was all me. I love you, Kenny. Please never leave.
Kenny's got that front row seat. He knows exactly what's going on in the huddle. He knows what's going on in the shot clock operator. I could totally see him pulling a Kaiser Sose there.
My last thought from yesterday, from yesterday's game, I think Mason Faulkner, I know we sort of joked about his premature celebration on the court, which Chris Mack referenced after the game. I was like, what are you doing? There's 17 seconds left. We're only up by two. But him bringing that energy, and I think he took a bad shot at the end of the game, but I kind of didn't hate it just because he was getting buckets and he was playing really hard. He also has size and bounce that I don't think the other guards that we have really do. Him playing that way can be a huge asset for us once we get to the ACC. He's got a little bit of that Terry Rozier bounce to his game. I think he can get around. We saw him beat Wake Forest defenders off the bounce multiple times yesterday and get into the lane and then make good decisions once he got there. I think he can be a huge help for this team if he plays that way. And Mac was saying, he's finally becoming the player that we saw glimpses of when he first got back to practice. Remember the story kind of took off when Jeff Goodman went to practice and said that Faulkner was the best player there. And we haven't seen that Mason Faulkner yet. He's starting to show some glimpses. He could be a guy that we need to play 25, 30 minutes once we get deeper into conference play. I thought he was really good last night.
Let me ask you, because I think this is maybe one of the issues that the team is having. Like, I look at the box score, and like last night, L. Ellis's 0-1 was 0 points. Dre Davis, no points, and absolutely got abused on defense pretty much the whole time he was in there. Like, one of the worst games I've seen Dre play, to be honest.
He was not good.
But, like, it just seems like, I don't know, like, does this team, like, need a consistent, and I know you guys, maybe you guys talk about this on the radio, I'm sure, but, like, should the rotation be consistent? Because I just think Chris Mack and the fan base, like, we put guys in and, like, we have no idea besides maybe Malik what we're going to get. And I think that's like, the biggest problem. Like, it's just, you know, so hit or miss. Like, you put L. Ellis in against the Michigan State game. He looks like the best player we've had all year in the second half. And then, really, we haven't seen a whole lot of it since. Dre Davis looked great in the first half, you know, a couple games in the first half of the year. And seems like he's struggled lately. So I don't know if it's just a consistency thing, but I just think if we're trying to find a new guy every night, that's not going to work. But I don't know. I don't really know how you fix that.
I'm with you. I mean, I do think that that's just kind of the makeup of this team, where it's going to be we ride the hot hand on a particular night. Like, one night could be L. Ellis's night, like you said, against Michigan State, where he plays 25, 30 minutes. Another, it could be Mason Faulkner, who has to be out there for 25, 30 minutes. I think that's just where you are, because I think we have a lot of good, not great college players. And when that's your makeup, like, we don't have an Alondis Williams. We don't have a guy who, you know, has to be out there for damn near 40 minutes every single night. We don't have a Carlick Jones like we did last year, or even a David Johnson. Maybe Malik Williams kind of fits that mold. He's been so good this year. I mean, he's been – I know he frustrates some people offensively, but defensively – He's always in the right place. He's one of the, I saw he's like number three in the country in defensive rebound rate. He's been a warrior on the board since really the first week of the season. Like, he's the one guy that I feel like we have to have on the floor. But besides him, like, we just don't have a college star. We don't have an all ACC caliber player, at least right now. Maybe somebody steps up, but I think that's just kind of be the makeup of this team.
Yeah. If we can just get maybe two more guys to like say, hey, this guy's going to get you 10 and 8, like a Sam last night, like 12 and 8. Or, you know, this guy's going to give you 11 points, you know, 4 assists a game. God, I feel like that would do wonders for this team. And then that's when the other guys kind of fill in and they can kind of be hit or miss. But, I mean, besides Malik, I do think we need a couple more guys. And I don't know who that's going to be, you know, to just to be a little more consistent. And I think that would help Mac in his rotations, because to be honest, I mean, we're in game, what game are we, 12? And, like, I still don't understand. Like, biggest moment, we tie it last night, like, 5 minutes left, here comes Sidney Curry. And, like, I mean, I was like, oh, okay, like, here we go. Like, guy hasn't scored since November, but here we go. So, you know, I think he's, Mac's still trying to reach a little bit for what to do here, but yeah, I don't know. A couple more consistent guys, and we might be in better shape on the offensive end.
The consistently giving playing time too to guys, and it was better last night, but there have been a couple of games where it's like a guy is clearly just doesn't have it that night, and he keeps coming in. It's like L. Ellis will have driven the ball straight into a 7-foot big man, 6 straight possessions, and we'll take him out and we'll get pissed, and he'll come back in and do the same thing. And then, like, we'll be on a huge run. Jared West will hit 3 threes in a row. And, you know, Malik will be done. And then it's like, here comes L off the bench. And you're like, really? Right now? Like this is not the time. But last night I had less of a problem with the substitutions than I've had in some of the games prior. I thought maybe Mac's starting to get a feeling. I mean, this is still – he's basically in week 4 of coaching this team. So it's understandable that there might be a few kinks to be worked out. But we'll see what happens. I had something else I was going to ask you, and I can't – now it's just escaped my mind. We have, I guess, news for this weekend. New Year's Day with Josh Pastner, maybe the game that I was most excited about, got moved. We're now going to play on Sunday will be the Georgia Tech game in Atlanta. So 2022 already off to a shitty start, Dan. Not happy about it.
Cue the, you know – meme of me in my New Year's party hat with like my streamers just looking ultimately sad and confused that Josh Pastner Day is canceled. But yeah, I guess, you know, New Year's Day football, like, I mean, the games are on New Year's Eve, like the playoff games. So like the actual New Year's Day games, besides, I do like watching the Rose Bowl. The other ones I honestly could do with or without, like,
yeah.
You know, if you have sports gambling in your state, I totally understand. But those games don't mean anything. So honestly, I don't really care. You know, until they develop a playoff, that's just kind of how I feel about the bowl system. So I was looking forward to the New Year's Day Louisville game, but, I guess we can wait one more day for Josh.
I gotta tell you, so like a month ago, you know, Mary, my wife, her birthday is January 3rd. And so she was like, I really want to go to the New Year's Day game against Georgia Tech for my birthday. Like, please get tickets. Like let's just work this out. Like, that'll be it. We'll make a day out of it. So, like, I'm like, all right, I'm going to cash some of my chips in. Like text my guy and be like, hey, you know, is it possible to get some tickets? Like, preferably not. And he's like, looking into it. He's like, do you want tickets? Do you want sweet? And like, going back and forth. And he's like, do you realize this game's in Atlanta? And I was like,
I was going to say, I was like, am I wrong here?
I was like, God damn it, Mary. Like, I didn't, she was so confident and so excited about it. I didn't even check the schedule. And so I was like, I'll get back to you about potentially a different game down the line. I was like, ugh, really tried to work it there. By the way, I saw, everybody who requested an emergency pod last night, it's getting out of control. Like, the emergency pod, there was a request, Dan, and I shit you not, and I didn't tell you this before, so you're hearing this for the first time. There was an emergency pod DM request from a member of the staff last night.
I mean, like, I get excited about wins, too. I do. But, yeah, we're talking about Wake Forest. I mean, this isn't Duke. This isn't Carolina. This isn't Kentucky. We're talking about Wake Forest.
I mean, I checked my DMs at, like, 11:45 last time, getting ready for bed, and it was just, like, emergency pod? Question mark. And I was like, let's get ready for Georgia Tech.
Was it Ross McMahon's? Just curious. You don't have to answer that.
I'm not answering. Who else? Everybody can guess who it was. But yeah, but I was like, I see all the emergency pod requests. I think it's funny, but come on. The standards are a little bit higher here.
I know. We are. Yeah. I mean, would we like to do it? Like, of course. But, like, if we start doing it for Wake Forest, and we're going to do it for, like, Virginia Tech or, like, you know, we got to set the bar somewhere.
Looking back now, a little bit of reflection here as we wrap up 2021. It's the last episode of the pod for 2021. What are you going to remember this calendar year for when it comes to Louisville sports? Is it all going to be just drama, or there were some good times mixed in there as well? A couple good times.
Yeah, I mean, obviously women's volleyball was awesome. I would say that was a highlight.
We're a volleyball pod now.
We are a volleyball pod.
Just count down the days till next season.
Yeah, shout out Tori Dilfer. Anyways, yeah, no, I mean, I would be hard pressed to say it was a successful year, just because I would say the two sports with the most eyes on it had pretty tumultuous years. But there were some good things. I don't know. I'm more curious how next year is going to go, but God, football's just holding me back a little bit. I want to say I'm more optimistic, but I'm just having a harder time doing it.
What sport are you more optimistic for, like, in the immediate future, men's basketball or football?
Oh, geez. I mean, I don't think people are going to hear this answer, but I truly think it's football. Like, and I know we just spent a half hour shitting. Like, God, are you still with us? I'm high on you, buddy.
We love Scott Satterfield.
This is a Scott Satterfield pod. I don't know. Basketball is just in a tough spot, man. Like, until these punishments come down, which, shout out the IARP, got some, I guess, somewhat good news there with NC State, so we'll keep our fingers crossed there. But
it's like, keep that same energy all 2022, IARP. Keep that. Exactly. Let's make this a trend.
Oh, God. But, I mean, I just think right now basketball is really handcuffed. And I don't know. I feel like the football, there's enough mediocrity that we're able to improve upon. Basketball, God, I mean, I say that. The basketball conference is way down this year, too. So
I don't know. It's tough. It's a really hard question, but if you really put a gun to my head, I would say football. What about you?
Man, I don't even know. I mean, it's. I feel like they're in exactly the same places right now. Like,
yeah.
Whatever the men's basketball equivalent of 6-6 or 7-5 is, that's where I feel like this team is. And hey, like, we still got 3 months left. I can be proven totally wrong. Like, I asked this question on the radio show a couple days ago, and I'll ask you now. Like, what is your what percentage chance do you give this men's basketball team to make the NCAA tournament as of right now?
35.
So I said 30 on Tuesday.
Okay.
I'll up it to like 32 after the Wake Forest win. I still feel like it's more likely than not that we're not going to go to the NCAA tournament, and like that's just not good enough.
It's yeah.
Like, there are no excuses this year. Like I don't want to hear the NCAA stuff because you know what? Arizona's in the top five. Kansas is in the top five. LSU, even though Will Wade is probably going to go down sometime relatively soon, they just lost for the first time last night. Like there are programs that are facing similar issues. I know that they're not exactly the same, but there are programs that are facing similar issues to the ones that we're facing that are not having a hard time excelling in this moment. And we have a roster that, you know, is certainly not made up of world beaters, but should be good enough to be an NCAA tournament team. And the fact that we're not on that track right now is just not good enough. Now, having said that, like I think that I've said many times, if this team doesn't make the tournament this year, I believe you need to part ways with Chris Mack. I'm not sure that's going to happen because the sense from college basketball people is that when the IARP gets back to Louisville with their responses to the not just the the FBI stuff, but when the NCAA responds to the Dino Gaudio allegations, those level two violations will not be level two violations against Chris Mack. I think that's what most people believe is going to take place. And if that's the case, you can't fire him for free anymore. You can't fire him for cause. And we don't have $12 million lying around for a buyout. So I think that it's more likely than not that Chris Mack is your head coach next year, even if Louisville does miss the NCAA tournament. I think the only way that doesn't happen is if Mack looks for, you know, any port in the storm, looks for a landing spot. You can't fire me, I quit.
Like, is there any part where he's like, you know what, it's just not working here. Let's put some Scott Satterfield feelers
out there. I think it's more positive. I think that's more likely than him being fired, but I don't think it's very likely either. And the other element of all this is when the IARP and the NCAA come back with stuff, it could be like June. It could be July. And that's too late in the process to make a head coaching change. So, typically when you make a move, you make it right after the season or just a couple of weeks after the season. And if we're not going to have our punishments by April, then you're probably, dealing with Chris Mack for another year, whether you like it or not. So I think he's going to be here next year. I could be wrong. If this season winds up being a complete calamity, if we have like a losing record or something, then maybe you say, like I don't care about the money. We'll work that out moving forward. We just have to move on.
The athletic department like has to take the fan base into consideration.
But the athletic department is made up of people that are like in positions of power for 2 months.
This is true. I know. That's why it's such a shit show. I mean, I don't even know where to begin, but I mean, Jesus, these atmospheres for these games, it's just such a far cry what it used to be. And it just makes me sad. I don't know. There's really no other word to put it. Like last night, yes, did it sound, loud on TV? Of course. Like, and I'm glad they got like kind of a good atmosphere, especially the last, half of the game. But I mean, it's just such a far cry from, I guess you could say, the good times that, yeah. It just feels different. And, I want to get that feeling back. And unfortunately for Chris Mack, for Scott Satterfield, it seems like most of the fan base, has kind of checked out, and it's probably going to take a change at some point for some of those fans that have checked out to kind of jump back in with 2 feet, unless you start winning. So, winning cures all. So hopefully we go on like a nice little streak. Hopefully this is the start of something here. We get the good energy back, and who knows what could happen.
Yeah, I think it's a long road back, but I would love to be proven wrong. Would love to see this team catch fire and have a really enjoyable January, February, March. That would be awesome, but we'll see. Do you have – we've rambled long enough here. Is there a Dan in the Dump story from the holidays or from before? Do you have a good story for this week?
You can take this how you want. I know I've been off with these, so I apologize. Yeah. I don't know. When you have kids, like, they ask funny questions, or sometimes they do quirky things where you start to, like, I have conversations you never thought you'd be having. So, like, my five-year-old daughter, Lila, she is just the sweetest. I mean, like, I'm totally, you know, she has me wrapped around her finger. I would do anything for the girl, nice as can be. But for some reason, I don't know what it is. Like, she's really obsessed, and obsessed is like a weird word. I don't want to think we're like sadistic or anything, but like, she's very curious about people dying. And I've had to have these like conversations lately, and I'm like, I can't believe, like, if you would have looked at me like 10 years ago, like explaining this to a 5-year old, you would have never believed it. But like, this summer we're in North Carolina, I'm just driving with my kids, and there's like a Dale Earnhardt car. I'm like, see that car, guys? That's like the best NASCAR driver that ever lived. And like, my son's like, oh, like, is he still racing? I'm like, no. Like, unfortunately, like, he's in heaven. And like, they're like, well, what happened? I'm like, am I really going down this road here? I'm like, well, he actually crashed during a race. And like, Lila's like, can I see the video? And I'm like, is this appropriate? Like, so, like, I actually did throw the video on. Like, it wasn't like an absolute destructive video. But, like, after I showed the video, she comes back and she's like, no, I actually want to see the video of him dying. And I'm like, okay, well, now we've gone too far. Like, I'm like, Lila, that's really not something that's out there, and you don't really look at stuff like that. Like, and again, I've already gone down this rabbit hole. It's been my fault. Well, like, this past week on the way home, like, I don't know how we got talking on cruise ships, but we started talking about the Titanic. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like, next thing you know, like, I'm telling my kids, like, the Titanic went down with all these people. And, like, again, I'm passing my phone back, like, because I want to show them pictures of what the Titanic ship looked like. But, like, they start scrolling through Google Images, and, like, there's, like, pictures of, like, you know, from the movie of like the boat like cracking in half. So now I'm getting like peppered with questions about what happened when they went into the water, and I'm like, what did I just do here? Like, so anyways, if you have kids, try to stay away from these conversations. I don't know what I'm turning my kids into, but that's kind of the road we're going down right now.
It's like in Knocked Up, with a little girl in the backseat is like, I Googled murder.
It's unbelievable. Like, I don't know like where these questions are coming from. But yeah, my daughter will forever know who Dale Earnhardt is.
Oh, that's fucking funny. All right, we're going to be better about podcasts in 2022. We're going to have one a week. We're not going to have a 3-week, sort of collapse like we had. The holidays were tough. I say that after having admitted that you were on a 2-week bender for the last,
like, holidays were tough. It's like, have we heard from Dan in a week and a half?
We will be better in 2022. Hopefully these teams can give us some exciting stuff to talk about. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast. It's the best way to know when new episodes are available on whatever platform you use. Just hit subscribe. If you can give us a nice rating, leave us a review. We always love that. We read the reviews on the show to try to encourage you to make that happen. I don't think we have any new reviews for this week, although I didn't check, so maybe we do. If we did, apologies. We'll get to you the next time. But until we talk to you guys again, go Cards. Happy New Year.
Go Cards!
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.